And welcome again. This is Luca Maino with Learn to Unlearn. I hope everybody's doing well. Let's listen to the end of the music again, shall we? I don't know why I can envision that orchestra playing at the end. Every time I hear it, it gets a little bit more special. I don't know. Well, and that reminds me very quickly of Beethoven. Beethoven, at the end of his life, apparently he had to put his head down on the piano to hear the vibrations because that's how deaf he was. Wow. I'm doing pretty much the same thing with my headphones. I have to hear it that loud because apparently that's the good listening level. So apparently I'm going more than one-third deaf, which is what my father promised if I was going to keep being a musician the way I was. Yes. Welcome back to my ranting. This is Luca Maino back with Learn to Unlearn. And we have one of the world's best producers with us, as usual. Hello, Steve. How are you doing?
Hello, Luca. Hello, everyone.
We're back.
I'm back.
You missed us. We're back.
That's right.
And we've been talking all over the place about, you know, Luca never knows how to start his show. That's always what we start with. I never even know where to start because there's so much going on. And I don't want to be repetitious and I don't want to be rambunctious. And you don't want to always talk about the same thing either. So let's be refreshing and also say hello to everybody in the chat. And Andy, first and foremost, everybody in the chat. And honoring Rick as well. Jeez, I'd like to do that every week. I'd like to have everybody know that that's what my shows are based on, is the honorary, you know, the memory of Rick, which is based on my healing. My healing went into overdrive with him, you know, honoring his music every week. Okay. It's something that I'm not going to get used to. And every time I hear that guitar, there we go. Luke starts dancing. Luke goes crazy. It's always that way. So I wanted to start a little bit closer to the music segment this time instead of jumping into, you know what, that quickly again, clips 2 and 4 that we have to hear, or that I'd like to have you hear and share with you of Ernst Zundel and his take, the other side of the coin of the now infamous World War II and the truths coming out of that. My truth that I'm finding out, okay? And this is firsthand. This isn't, like I was saying last week, it's not just somebody talking saying, oh, I heard this and this is from somebody and this person, you know? No, this is firsthand, the person, first person talking about what he did, what he found, the research he did. If I can remember him correctly, 12,000 pages in the first trial, 7,000 pages in the second trial, having his house torched and burned out nearly twice, being attacked in the jail cell by the Jewish community, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I mean, if he's doing something right, isn't that what always happens? So this is what we're going to do, part two of that, or maybe part three next week. I don't want to overload on anything. I like being balanced, like I was just saying to our producer before the beginning of the show. I think a lot of this show is going to be leaning on instinct more than anything, because I'm looking at this and I'm going, wow, you know, it's fascinating what they're trying to do to us. And this morning, I'm looking at that red marker that I just wrote down really quickly, passing, and just, you know, underlined it. What is intent? And I'm like, huh, what is intent? And I thought, my intent is to share and to read for you and to, you know, that, because that's what I love doing. And who did I get that idea from? Steve, our producer, with Cancel the Cabal and with his show. What he does is he reads. And last time he read, I think I fell asleep listening to him, because it's relaxing and there's a way that he reads. Okay. And Steve, this is a compliment for you, in case you, I hope you're listening. And I've got into writing down my ideas. And I'm like, how cool is that? I can, you know, follow my ideas, keep them in line, and then just keep track of what I want to talk about. And so intent is a really big one. And through Steve's idea of writing and everybody's idea in the chat, plus Annie's openness of subjects, it's sky's the limit, right? We can go from racism to Indian nations. And it's such a pleasure, you know, because I guess intelligent minds think alike. And that's something else that I wanted to talk about in that segment in particular. And I told Steve to remind me, please, if I forget, that, you know, if everybody's telling the truth and if everybody's truthers, why are there so many different versions of the truth? It's like, hello. Okay. So we're going to talk about that in a few minutes or whenever. I'm not sure, because we're flying off the seat of our pants again, as usual, or I am. But you know what? I wanted to start. Let's go in gently with the music segment, because I might get a little grief for this from the people in the chat, but there's something that I grew up with. Actually, I'll tell you the whole story. Okay. And this is dedicated to Rick. We may as well go this way. I just took the strings off of my bass guitar recently. And I don't know why it was. Well, don't argue with your instinct, Luca. There's that word again, instinct. My instinct is telling me, take the strings off. Okay. Take the bass, take the neck off, you know, with the four bolts in back. I never did this before. Go outside with your boiled linseed oil. And I taught myself how to laminate the neck. And that's what I did. I laminated the neck. You leave it dry. You do it a second time in the places where it's missing it, maybe. Gorgeous look of dark, deep wood. Plus, you're taking care of it. Put it back on. Okay. Now you have, it's like air playing to the max, because you have what feels like a guitar and you don't have strings on your bass. So you can fly around with that thing around your neck and air play the guitar and look like a complete idiot. And that's pretty well what I felt like doing with Rick's music. But I go through my stuff and I'm thinking guitar solos, guitar solo. Wait now. I remember something from not too far back. Uh-oh. And I said to myself, you know what? I got to play this on air guitar, and I'm going to see what it sounds like. Okay, for guitar players, this is one of the most important songs, okay? Very, very well-crafted guitar solo from start to finish. I'm sorry, but I brought this back up, and I started listening to that really carefully. And at one point, I even knew how to airplay it. Just have a listen to a little bit of it. As a drummer, I got into it, and then I just fell in love with it again. I listened to it, and it's like, wow, it got better and better and better and better. But, you know, I'm encouraging people to listen to it. And at some point, I'll get back to it again. It's a blast from the past, if you will, okay? And I had to share that with you because, you know, the song is quite long, but it's so well-crafted with the drums and everything and the percussion. It brought me right back to where I was the first few times I heard it in the club, full blast, okay? So I really enjoyed that. My other little blast from the past was when I remember going over a certain band that I love playing, and we used to play this. And this is one of their kick ASS parts of their show, okay, which I bring in for like 30 seconds or less, I do believe. And I had to play it because this is what it sounded like when I played on stage with tap dancers and violinists. Just have a listen to this. This is the end of the song. After this break, and that's what it sounded like, okay? That's how good it was, that powerful. I'll have to dig up in my recordings or, you know, find out if I can ever find those again, but that's the kind of stuff. The guitar player, at one point, you can hear him scratching the guitar sound full blast with the beat of the dancers. And what I was doing was literally playing exactly what the dancers were doing, because at practice, you learn what they're doing, right? So I ended up doing on the metal rims of my drum exactly what they were doing with their feet, with the guitar player and the bass player doing that crunch rhythm. It was so tight. It was, your shirt would move at practice. I could sit straight behind the drums and the sound waves of the music being that loud, it would move your shirt. That's how good it was. So it, you know, it brings me back again, and it's like, wow, you know, I got to go back to being on stage very, very soon. So when I listen to Rick before the show, it is in that sense. So it's a really good healing process for me as well. And with that, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to actually take that song that I was talking to Steve about to take a little sip of water and come right back. Yeah. Oh, it sounds like the Riverdance. Cool. That's Grand Dérangement. It was an Acadian band that played that. So there's a lot going on, right? And I needed to share stuff with you. And before we get into Ernst Zundel and what we got into last time, I was dealing with a bit of racism recently, and it's like, wow, Luca, why don't you talk about it, you know, on your show, you know? And I wanted to share it, because while I'm talking about World War II with somebody, no need for names, the conversation goes to me suggesting what literally happened as truth in this world, that the German government of the time literally went to ask permission to use the swastika for the National Socialist emblem, and that brought in the entire situation of the Indians, okay, of the indigenous of North America, Canada included. And she's from Canada, so as soon as she hears me start defending the Indian, all of a sudden she starts talking about how, well, you know, the residential schools, you know, were good for the children, you know, in lots of ways, because it taught them how to, you know, prosper like the church taught them. And isn't it funny that in the very beginning, way back in the beginning, and I'm going to say the name of Dr. Roland Christjohn because you've heard me talk about him before, one of the most important lectures he ever had, he said that he used that phrase. He said there are people that even think that the residential schools were good for people. And whether people flourished in the residential schools or not, that does not take the word genocide away from what they did to the Indian nations. Because, and I will be able to approach her in particular with this, that it's in the 1948 International Convention on the Prevention of the Crime of Genocide, I believe it's called, it's that long, initiated by the guy who invented that word himself, Raphael Lemkin, in 1945, I do believe, or 48, was it? Probably the same year, that's right. It was the same year as the first convention, that he was not invited to attend, by the way. They use his word, but he's not invited. He went anyway. So it's like, you know what I mean? It's really good not to bite somebody's head off, you know, right away when you hear that, oh, there we go, you know, and fight. You literally back off, you listen to it, you digest it, you try and do what you can with it. It was a slap in the face to me, because that's what I do. That's what I work with. And those are the people that are our best teachers, and that's what I wanted to get at. And I'm learning that. Oh, no, Luca, you don't have to defend what you believe. Relax. It's okay. Truth doesn't have to be defended. It's like, listen to her. Watch her. You're looking at what people think. This is what almost the whole world thinks. Oh, okay. Yeah, well, you know, we built schools for them. We taught them English. You know, we gave them Christianity. You know, okay. Did you really, though? You know, or did you honor their being? Did you honor their purpose, who they were? No. Okay. It was either assimilate or exterminate. Okay. We know the drill. So the person is probably going to be able to clearly see, you know, once I tell her it's parallel. I mean, look at what they did to, you know, National Socialist Germany. Look what they did to the indigenous. It's the same thing. They want to get rid of those people. Churchill was all about that. Getting rid of these savages, these uncivilized, whatever you call them. You know, he had different names for them. In Kenya, he called them blackamoors. And they were to be removed. Okay? So this is a whole other side of the coin that we need to discuss. It's very, very important. And how to deal with it. How to deal with these people that... Okay, so then something really interesting sets in. All of a sudden, it becomes instinct. And I talked about this before. It's funny. I mentioned instinct before because instinct has so much to do with what? Righteousness, with being natural, being in touch with your spirit, knowing right from wrong. Okay? Just put a list up with those two words, intellect, and then make a line straight down, and then write instinct. And see what comes out of intellect. Oh, intellect. Oh, you know, the lies that are given us, you know, that are pushed on us, the control that they have over us, the control that we can have over these people. The mind constantly lies to us all the time. Intellect, okay? In other words, what the system teaches you, and that's capitalism, and that's competition, and that's, okay? Look at what instinct does. Instinct does the exact opposite. Why do you think they want to kill instinct so much? Because your instinct is in line with your behavior, with knowing right from wrong, as I was saying, with your morals, with your integrity. Oh, boy. Right? If you have too much of that, then this stuff is not going to fly. And that's kind of what's happening with me. You know, what is National Socialism? Well, just go ask an elder. Go ask an Indian elder. I beg your pardon? That's the first thing you're going to hear. And you know what? I passed it by Steve before the show, and we talked about it. And we agreed. You know, it's not like we agreed to disagree. I don't think we've had an argument yet. But I'm showing the image right now, and I just want to go through it very quickly with Steve and you, and we're going to describe it. Communism, with the Rothschild emblem on top. I found that interesting. Communism is the person with the gun to the worker's back, and the worker's just working, and, you know, that's that. Capitalism is the guy working and the person behind him taking out of his pocket, stealing what he has and putting it in a bag and going away with it. What National Socialism is, everybody works. Everybody has a firearm on their back, if they wish to or not, doesn't matter. And they all work and they all keep what they work for. And this is what turned Germany around in a second flat, because usury and private banking and all that's the stranglehold that you're seeing right now in America. That's why Patton prophesized it in America. That's what Hitler said. No, we're not having any of that. And that's the first thing he threw out. And when he made his own economic system and his own money system, which the big bankers couldn't profit from, what do you think they did? They made a war. That's what they did. And this is what the story is. And this is the other side of the coin that we're not allowed to talk about. And a good friend of mine from Germany, he actually says, Luca, you bring that to court and it's irrelevant, because the Holocaust is already, it's already a fact. It's already a proven fact. You can't touch that. See, they will not revisit it because they know. And last week we talked about what they did to a certain Sylvia Stoltz, who was the lawyer who was defending a known Holocaust denier. See? So it's very, very, very delicate. And before the break, before we go into that, I think we're going to get into that after the break, and even do the break a little earlier if we have to. But I'm just going by feel, because I want to share something important. Leo Buscaglia was one of my early mentors. And yes, this is related to everything, you'll see. Leo Buscaglia talks about how he grew up in this Italian family, just like Luca, you know, at the dinner table. Each one of us children had to say what we learned that day, at least something. And the kids would look at each other, you know, what did you learn today? You know, I don't know. Well, you better find something, okay? Or you're in trouble. You know, you had to learn something. You had to come to the table with something you learned that day. You know, the population of Nepal is, you know, and then you get the rolled eyes, okay? I mean, something meaningful. So I said to myself, why not start a little segment or something? Call it just a note. Call it something from the past. Call it like a cliche, a new name for it. You guys can think up a name and I'll use it. A little part of a segment where little lines come up, little cliches come up, like this one that I want to throw at you. And I want to see what you guys think about it. Even the word legal, L-E-G-A-L, means the undoing of God's law. That's something I heard from somebody by the name of Carlene one time. Even the word legal.
I've said that before too.
It means the undoing of God's law.
I've said that before too.
Huh. Can you elaborate on that? I would love to hear what you have to say on that.
Legal definition of the word legal.
Okay.
The undoing of God's laws.
Okay. That's so elaborate. Steve, that's so elaborate. Oh. No, I understand. It's just, you know, that's another rabbit hole, right? It's crazy. There's always something to look at, and there's so many different rabbit holes. But this is what it is. It's our instruction. It's our, you know, whatever resonates with me. This is where I'm going. Wow, you know, I want to take that. Oh, you know, and I have this little piece of paper that says, "Be the conscience of your nation." Remember, like I say, when your conscience. Your nation loses its conscience. That's what it is. Be the conscience of your nation, you know? And I'm looking at all the things they're trying to kill, and instinct is one of them. I had to talk about that. There's something else that Hitler himself did not believe in, and he said was one of the most dangerous things that lead to a complete imbalance of humanity, basically, in my own words. That's not what he said, but this is what I took my take from it. And you'll see what I mean. Intergenerational wealth. According to him, And according to his teachings, he said that intergenerational wealth bred laziness. There's no ambition anymore. The money's trickled down to you through the family. You have less morals. See what I mean? So there goes instinct. Okay. There goes, you know, it's all intellect. Oh, okay. Then you find somebody rich that has their money brought down to you from them. Okay. We have something called Grand Ave, right on the Mississippi, the higher up, you know, all where the big wigs live, you know, the really fancy houses on one street called Grand Ave. And I'm willing to bet, I'm not going to give a number, but quite a few of them have that intergenerational wealth. I'm willing to bet on it. And I would love to go to the door, you know, and find out. There's got to be a formula you can ask to find out, you know, is this through intergenerational wealth, or is this something you built yourself from your hard work? See, that's something else that he was talking about. You know, Waldo Emerson even talks about that, about the nonconformist in self-reliance, okay? Waldo Emerson is very clear. You're not going to conform. No, do it yourself. It's really interesting, and I'm a hypocrite basically talking about intergenerational wealth because I received intergenerational wealth for a while. Yeah, but look at me now. Where did it go? I gave a lot of it away. Sure, I bought a drum set. Yeah, okay. You know, but now I'm going, oh, you know, what would it be without it? You'd be trained in instinct. You'd be trained in survival. You'd be trained, see, and all the beautiful things that come back that that government does not want, because, you know, stronger people, that's what's going to happen. So what do? You just kill them all, okay? One of the very important things, since I'm on that now, right before the break, and you know what? I'm even going to share the link to this 3-minute video that I'm talking about in the chat right there. I would like, maybe we can go through this next time, because the other two clips are really important, but there's something that I have it darkened. Germans start to build mighty infrastructures with this new money system. German society begins to value the work of physical labor and holds it in high esteem while they're singing the national anthem with, you know, not with guns, but with shovels. Okay. German engineering becomes world class as Germans begin to lead in science and in health. Okay. It's all very obvious. That's what they wanted to do. Okay. Germans are thanking Hitler for freeing them from the debt slavery of the Rothschilds usury system. Everything flies. Austria flourishes instantly all of a sudden. You know, it's something we have to revisit because there's something about the human knowing his worth. Okay. Again, I really believe that it's not power, it's responsibility. And there are good people when given power, when given positions of power, they will still allow themselves the integrity of being good leaders. I know it. I know it to be true, because if I fell in good money right now, you better believe that there'd be a lot of happy people with me, because I'd be sharing all of it. You don't? No. I don't believe that. That maybe absolute power corrupts absolutely, because absolute power is dictatorship or whatever. That's bad. See, everything has a balance, right? So I'm trying to find the balance, and I'm going, wow, this is amazing. Like, you know, so when we come back, we're going to hear more about Ernst Zundel and balance this out, because I'm going, no, there's got to be so much more to everything than what we've been told. And that's what Learn to Unlearn is all about. So we will be back right after this. And yes, I did wanted to say hello, Moon. I saw she came in. If other people did as well, I'm sorry if I missed that. But I wanted to say hello to Moon in particular. We'll be right back after this, folks.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around, and be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Yes, and we have to. Very important. Very important. Okay, so last week, in a very delicate moment, I had shared clip one and clip two of a big warning by Ernst Zündel, who was on trial as a, quote, Holocaust denier, unquote. And just by studying what happened to Sylvia Stoltz, his lawyer, it's very clear how they don't want things to come out. And it's after hearing that and after watching the movie Hellstorm, and after watching the movie on BitChute, which I have a copy of now, The Greatest Story Never Told, a six-hour movie that you can break up into chapters of 15 minutes each. It's so well made. Dennis Wise, David Irving, all these names start coming out that you never heard before. Or, you know, if you haven't gone down that rabbit hole. So, all of a sudden, the narrative gets, argumented? Wait a minute, challenged. There we go. In court, okay? And they're not allowed to talk about it. Oh, okay, nope. The lawyer goes right to jail. And I really recommend you go to Cancel the Cabal and watch my last show to hear those clips and to hear the story of Sylvia Stoltz. Wow. So this is Ernst Zündel again, and this is what is not supposed to come out. These are two clips, and I'll just very quickly go over what we heard in clip one. Last week, he starts with the myth of Israel, and he explains the lies of Menachem Begin, Solomon Morel, the Polish murderer. You can hear all this from last week. The hypocrisy of the modern Jew, the Holocaust problem, you know, what is going on? Okay, why did Germany turn on the Jews? What was the problem with all the philosophers, with all the high thinkers, with all the doctors, the scientists, the lawyers? You know, why would they? Ah, come to find out, you know? See, and these people, they blame their victims for their aggression, for their crimes that they commit themselves. This is how it works. They mirror, okay? They project. So it becomes very easy to see. So in clip two, he starts by talking about karma. I would have given the guy a hug if he was in arm's length. He talks about karma and he says, you know, what would it be to me to lie to you and to fill your hearts with all this nonsense? Well, I know in my heart I'm not true to myself. Okay. Every day he makes sure, as Luca really wants to make sure that everything that I talk about is the truth to the best of my ability. See? So I would be a hypocrite if I didn't share this. Oh, well, Luca, that could get you arrested. Oh, Luca, that could get you jailed. Oh, Luca, that could get you killed. You know, I'm already talking about the Native Americans. I'm already talking about the American Indian movement, corrupt as they are. You know, I'm talking about everybody. So why not this? No. I'm not hiding it anymore. And if people want to know, you're doing them a service. The numbers, in Auschwitz, it goes from 6 million, then to 4 million, then to 1.5 million, then 1.4 million. He says it in his German accent. And the Red Cross numbers that I have and that most people do have is 271,307 in all camps combined. Something's missing. Oh, Luca. They blame Germany for atrocity propaganda of gas chambers in World War I. It had to be retracted because it was proven false. Oh, so they do it again in World War II. There's our first clue. Okay. In clip three, you're going to hear names like Robert Florisson, David Irving, talking about the Jew totals. You're going to hear about Hitler trying to work with the, believe it or not, the Jews, building large ghettos created especially for them. His collaboration with the Jewish state that he envisioned. Oh, it's exactly the opposite now. See? It's really amazing. But like I said last week, he says it better than I do. So let's jump into clip number three from Ernst Dundel and get your ears peeled, because he talks with that German accent, just like my mother, my grandmother used to talk with. And listening to him talk, it's like listening to my mother or my grandmother, literally putting me to sleep.
In my court cases, we asked David Irving, we asked Dr. Faurisson, the French revisionist, and all of them came to the conclusion, Irving said, that fewer Jews died during the entire war than we British killed in one bombing raid on one German city in one night, namely Dresden. You take each one, if you have the time, we can take each case by the time. Take, for instance, Theresienstadt, the large ghetto, basically, the city created by the Führer for the Jews, where he taught them how to have their own state, because Jews didn't have their own state before, you know? And so the nice things that the Nazis did for the Jews was that they trained in the Swabian Alps, where I come from, in special camps, Jewish people in farming, in cabinet making, and so on, professions that they, not, by tradition, didn't have, but which they needed for their state.
So Hitler, in a way, helped the creation of the Jewish state?
There's a book out called Adolf Hitler, Begründer Israels. Israelis, historically, 82% of the Israeli population not being Semites but being Khazars, converted to Judaism 800 years after Christ,
so
and later.
There is a chance that Hitler would have recognized the Jewish state.
Of course. Of course. It's most, the collaboration, as outlined in this book, The Transfer Agreement, by a Chicago Jew called Edwin Black, details the collaboration between Adolf Hitler's Germany and the early Zionists. The Zionist movement only got its tremendous influence and power in the Jewish community thanks to the role that they played in collaborating with Adolf Hitler.
See, so you can see, if you flip everything around, you're capable of seeing it. Yes, it's exactly the opposite. Yes, it's exactly the opposite. So now we're getting somewhere, because this is the piece of the puzzle that I kept missing. I'm going, what am I missing? Why are 113 cities and towns and villages reduced to rubble? Oh, he's just talking about Dresden. That was just one of them. Okay, so there are 112 others. Right.
How many Jews died at Auschwitz?
Yes.
Less than 20,000. In all the satellite camps, including Auschwitz, and they died not of gassing. There was not a single gas chamber in all of National Socialist dominated Europe, because the killing method of executing, whether criminals, spies, traitors, saboteurs, whatever, in Europe, in every Gentile country in Europe, never, ever historically was gas. The only nation that ever had this fetish of gas chambers, which is the most complicated, idiotic, and expensive way of killing people, was the United States.
What about?
Did you hear that? You know, it's idiotic. That's my grandmother when she talks. It's like, you know, would you stop it? You know, and slapping me upside the head, you know. That's exactly the way she would talk. It's idiotic. It's expensive. It's ridiculous, you know. Plus, I mean, if they tried to use it for anything like that, they probably would have blown themselves up. I think he talks about that too.
What about all those?
What about all the other concentration camps? Yeah, listen to this.
The war in Auschwitz, in Treblinka, and other places.
Okay, Dr. Piper, the curator of the Auschwitz Museum, was interviewed by my young Jewish friend David Cole, who is a Jewish revisionist.
Yes.
On tape. Dr. Piper admits that the facilities that they're showing there were reconstructed after the war by the Soviet Army and the Poles. Now, I sent an American technology expert, Fred Leuchter, execution technology guy, over. He took the samples. He brought back over 30 samples, had them analyzed in the United States, in the very installation that has been shown to 500,000 tourists a year as Auschwitz I gas chamber, where Rudolf Hess's gallows stand, because he was going to be strangled and was strangled within sight of his crime. nothing took place in that so-called gas chamber amounting to killing. It was a bunker hospital, it was a crematory, but it was certainly not a gas chamber because no traces even to this day exist.
No traces to this day exists. And he's also going to talk about no order of the Führer exists, has ever existed of putting these people to death, because no such order was ever signed. No such order ever existed. It was only about displacing the unwanted population. And he gets into what the unwanted population was at the time. And he's very clear about what they were. In the fourth and last clip, he's very, very clear. So, Ovens, okay, this is what he starts with. There's a testimony. Very quickly, and I'm sorry for him talking so quickly, but you really have to pay attention. No monuments in the USA for World War II and for Korea, for people lost, for our Americans. Oh, but there's one far away in Europe for the Holocaust. Okay, see, the total losses in World War II, according to him and his researchers, 780,000. How come boatloads of Jews arrive on the Baltimore, the harbor master, all of a sudden boatloads of Jews get accepted into the United States without being checked, without anything, and they come from Eastern Europe, Germany, everything is being admitted now by the world Jewish leaders. Because nobody can do anything about it. It's all enshrined in law and protected. And this little guy is going, oh, wait a minute. We have to do something. We have to at least tell the people what's going on. So in this last clip that I prepared especially for you, we talk about these things and more. So let's get right to it.
Forgive you for it, because I used to believe in the Holocaust. And I was as loose with my terms about ovens.
Oh, really?
Ovens are crematories. Now, I understand that to Jewish people, especially Orthodox Jews, the idea of cremation is as bad as eating pork. If you have been to the Holocaust Museum in the United States,
Have you been there?
There is no monument in the United States Capitol for the soldiers who died in Korea or in World War II. But there is one for Jews who supposedly died in far off Europe. You don't see something wrong with it?
And how many died during the war, killed, executed? What do you think?
The French Jew, Domerck, whom I have worked with very closely, he says, of all causes, bombing, old age, and so on, during that six-year period, 780,000. Boatloads of Jews came to the United States that were, according to the harbor master of Baltimore, Maryland, allowed to enter in the dark of night into the American cities without ever being properly identified, checked, and processed.
I see.
I know people who worked for UNRWA. Just today I had lunch with an American who, in the town of Augsburg in 1950, his job was to process displaced persons. And he told me how many times Jews were sent to the United States that were clearly subversives and Marxists that came from the East. No, it is the third United States government official that had this function that I have interviewed.
And there you go.
Actually, one of them gave testimony at my trial. All I'm saying is, you don't even have to take my word. You're an Israeli. You can get the original Hebrew version. Take Tom Segev's book and read in here how Nahum Goldman, the World Jewish Congress, the various other Jewish leaders, got Konrad Adenauer to admit the guilt of how the document that he read to the German parliament was written by Nahum Goldman, corrected with schoolmasterly red. The arrogance of these people to dictate to the Germans this policy. And the German nation was saddled since with this.
I bet that Mr. Segev will shiver.
It's a gold mine.
Will shiver.
It's a gold mine.
If you hear you using his book.
I have used Tom Segev's book over the airwaves in the United States in radio programs and TV programs, in public lectures, because Tom Segev gave to the world something that the Americans and the Germans and the British don't have access to yet. But thanks to Tom Segev and Israeli laws, we do. And that is that in your country, the diplomatic papers are open for public scrutiny after 20 or 30 years. In America, they're still not open. In Germany, they're still not open. I understand why, because the German government, they behave just like Judenrede in the ghetto, except the other way around. They saddled the Germans with this horrific guilt problem for which the Germans have nothing to be guilty of.
I heard that you still celebrate Hitler's birthday.
Every 20th of April, come rain or shine.
Yeah.
Well, if you can
celebrate that?
If Jews can celebrate Menachem Begin and Jabotinsky's and Shamir's, if they can celebrate their birthdays, boy, I'll be damned if Adolf Hitler is not going to have his birthday celebrated by myself. Adolf Hitler was one of the most gifted. Most gifted and the most sought out and wined and dined leaders in German history. Kings and queens and dukes of Windsor and presidents and prime ministers came and went to see him. Every civilized government recognized him. The Zionist movement lionized him. If Hitler had not come to Germany in 1933, Germany had 270,000 suicides the year before. Germany was, in Berlin, the sin capital of the world, thanks to largely Jewish entrepreneurs who ran the smut films and the cabarets and so on. Germany was dope capital for Europe. Germany was the sick man of Europe. German industry was virtually dead. German social welfare payments, for instance, in the state of Thuringia, were so horrendously high that they were 90% of that state's budget. Without Adolf Hitler, Germany would have died with a whimper in 1934 or 35, and the world wouldn't have given a shit. Okay, so Adolf Hitler saved Germany, and I am a child of Adolf Hitler. I would have never been born if my dad, my father, hadn't gotten a job thanks to the genius of Adolf Hitler. And millions of other Germans would have not been born, who today dump on Adolf Hitler. They deserve their miserable lives to this man who saved Germany, gave them work, bread, and honor for at least 12 years. So Germany at least didn't live on its knees or crawl on its belly for 12 years, like it has done since Adolf Hitler's demise. At least he gave the Germans 12 years of liberation and freedom. Now, you can immediately smirk and say, but what about all the concentration camps?
See? And if you say that, you weren't really listening to him in the first place. So this is the other side of the coin, a very interesting one, and you're hearing it from the horse's mouth, okay? Really interesting in Last of the Mohicans. This is... how the story goes. This is how they were trying to infect, this is how Britain was trying to infect the tribes, go to the French tribes, and say this and go, always trying to disunite, always trying to cause trouble. See? So, there's always two sides to everything. And I've always been told that. So, first of all, I wanted to thank everybody involved in learning and listening and having room for this information to allow me to bring it out, because to me, if you don't understand that, you don't understand what they're doing today, because they were allowed to, Churchill. I mean, how many genocides? I haven't counted them. So, I just wanted to thank everybody for allowing me to bring this out. And why don't we close with some good words? Okay, I'm looking at this meme, and it's saying reclaim your culture before someone else claims it. Okay. So this is what we have to do. I'm doing it with the indigenous. It's kind of funny. And I'm also doing it with my German culture. So it's kind of a special thing. And it really, it makes so much sense. And it doesn't really matter to me if I'm the only person standing alone, you know, not maybe not preaching to the choir, but, you know, saying what I believe in. And, you know, when you believe in something, it's very close to you. Okay. If you believe in something and you're feeling it, it resonates with you. Why does it resonate? That's the first thing I ask. Why does it feel that way? And I get it to talk to me. And when you practice talking to yourself or letting, you know, allowing that conversation to take place, most people just shut it off. Most people do, oh, okay, you know, okay, don't turn left. Oh, they turned left. Pow, accident, you know, or something, right? I've listened to my instinct all the time, and this is where the shows are going. This is why they're going so well. Hopefully, that's what I think. I hope you feel the same way. Because of instinct, because of explaining, Luca, why don't you explain this first? And, you know, why did I explain instinct first and intellect and then go into this afterwards? It all makes sense. If you're patient and ride with me, we'll ride the wave together. Sometimes I, you know, I go off on a tangent, but I always seem to come back. Another beautiful meme that I wanted to share before the end of my time. It says, cherish those that you have in your life because you don't know when they're not going to be there anymore. And I keep thinking of Rick and, you know, how much he's missed. I think of my family and how much I miss them. You know, and how things could be different, but they're not. Okay. So there's a reason for that. There's a lesson. And the reason why people awaken is simply it's because they've stopped agreeing with things that insult their soul. And in my case, that's what it was. And it's the indigenous laws. It's indigenous philosophy that, you know, showed me that I do have a place in life and showed me that I do have a voice and that I, you know, I do have a story to tell and that I am important, you know, just like every one of you. So we all have a story to tell. I don't know what we're going to talk about next week. It'll be fabulous to, you know, to think about it and go wherever we want. This is the whole idea. So Steve, I'm ranting again. Have you anything to say at all? Didn't I ask you to tell me something about something or other? Wasn't it health we were talking about?
I don't remember.
I didn't want you to.
You said you wanted to start out with it.
What?
And I don't really know what it was now.
Uh-oh. It was something about health, I thought. See, I can't be writing stuff down all the time. But it was good. And maybe we'll think about it next time. But, you know, in a very, very small health segment, there is stuff that I did want to talk about because Annie was saying she was losing sleep and she was in bad positions. And that's what I wanted to add. Maybe you might have had bad positions too, because what happens to me if I'm really, really tired, I don't pay attention to how I fall asleep. And when you fall asleep in a bad position, like your arm crooked the way you don't usually do, or your back moved a certain way, and you're really, really tired, that's usually how things start. For me, and I'll give a good example very quickly about my pillow. I paid a lot of money for that pillow, and it was a lot of years ago. And finally, it starts to go weak on me. And my neck started to hurt, and my neck started to hurt, and my, you know, for weeks until I found out, oh, maybe I should put the pillow that way and, you know, push it back a little bit further. And all of a sudden, your neck doesn't hurt anymore. Your body will teach you those things if you're patient enough and you listen and you find out. For me, as a matter of fact, I'm really hurting. Well, not really hurting, but right where my stoma is, where the urine bag is and the stoma, I have a problem with a muscle going up and down my leg and almost up to my chest area. It's really sensitive. And my best friend, my brother from another mother, tells me today that, oh, Luca, that's just your muscles because you're working them. And, you know, you're getting back the elasticity that you've lost. Our body has to completely regenerate after what I've been through. And I'm just learning how to walk again. I'm learning balance again. I'm learning how to take my bass guitar with no strings and airplay Rick's songs before the show. And I think I'll do that every time from now on. So all this to say thank you to everybody. And, you know, just to allow the information when it comes, because A, it's important to me enough to speak about it. And B, it tells you how much you're important to me and how important it is to share it with you. So, oh, Annie said, did I miss any? Oh, Stephen said that. Oh, okay. Okay, good. So instead of, you know, us being those people eating popcorn, you know, with their feet up watching the world burn, I want to be one of those that are going to be able to help and share the wealth of information with everybody who wants to, you know, listen. So thank you, everybody. And Steve, any last words at all? Like Roger likes to say all the time. Any last words at all? No, he's on mute. Okay. No, that's fine. Well, we're going to say goodbye and thank you very much for being with me and sticking around for the whole show. And we'll see you guys next week. Please be safe, everyone. And I'll see you back on, you know, probably a Wednesday or before that. I'm trying to make more time and things are working great as far as that goes. Thanks to everybody in the chat for being with me. And we'll see you next week again.